Welcome to episode 92 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski in nowhere near Greensburg, PA, but I guess 2 hours away. And Alan Olson is nowhere near where Tiger lives, so.
Not even close.
This week we're talking about the U.S. Open and pretty much just the U.S. Open. We'll start things off by talking about the playoff, of course. Monday, 90 holes, 72 holes, of course, was not enough to decide the U.S. Open. 90 holes was not enough. We had to go one more. I got what I wanted. I got to see good golf. I honestly didn't really care who won. Part of me wanted, I guess the practical side of me wanted Tiger to win just because, you know, not to say that Rock was a no-name, but relatively he is. No-name is winning U.S. Opens. I don't care how good their story is. I mean, Angel Cabrera has a good story. Who really cares that he won the U.S. Open last year? It's a much bigger story and puts golf more in the forefront when Tiger wins. So the practical side, again, wanted me to see Tiger win, but I mostly wanted to see good golf, and I got that in spades.
Pretty much speechless on this end. I mean, the golf on Monday, I mean, the golf the whole weekend, I'll talk about that later as far as Torrey Pines, but it was just unbelievable. It just kept building and building and building, and then all of a sudden, I mean, Monday, I cannot think of a better round of golf on TV that I've watched. Can you?
Right, we've seen those, like, those old matchups between, like, Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer, those made-for-TV things that they show on the Golf Channel and stuff, and this was the best head-to-head matchup I think I may have ever seen. You know, they both shot even par. It wasn't like a birdie fest. They weren't throwing eagles at each other. They were throwing some good and some so-so shots. I mean, every part of their game was tested. There were bunkers. There was rough. There was driving. There was putting. I can't remember a better head-to-head matchup. I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting some Ryder Cup matchups and stuff, and this one's getting a little more importance because it's fresh in my mind, but you know, this was all there was to watch, you know, whereas in the Ryder Cup, you know, you kind of miss out on a few things, and we saw it all, and it was interesting for 4.5 to 5 hours.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine what the ratings are for this for NBC, not only having the primetime golf, but also...
Well, the primetime ratings we know were 13.5, which are almost as high as Tiger Woods winning in 97 at the Masters, and, you know, part of that dip is probably because some of the people were watching online or watching in other ways, you know. It wasn't all this. In 97, you pretty much had to turn your TV on to watch. So 13.5 is a pretty darn good rating. So we know the Sunday ratings. I don't know about Monday.
I'm thinking a lot of people I talked to were all watching at the office, so I'd have to imagine productivity took quite a hit in the U.S.
Right. I think a lot of people were watching wherever they could, and, yeah, in the office was a big thing. You could stream it at usopen.com, so... I think a lot of people are doing that. It's kind of interesting. In 1962, of course, Jack Nicklaus was kind of the underdog playing at Arnold Palmer's area course at Oakmont. They went to a playoff, and the underdog won that one. So I almost thought we'd get kind of a similar thing here. Rocco Mediates from kind of near Pittsburgh, playing on Tiger's kind of home course, or as much of a home course as it gets for U.S. Open. And we almost saw the same thing this year, except this year, again, the Pittsburgh area guy lost. But he happened to be the underdog this time around.
I mean, you got to give Rocco credit. I mean, having him at the top of the leaderboard anyway was pretty unbelievable. But to have him hang with Tiger, better than anybody, better than Ernie, better than Phil. I mean, you throw up anybody in the top 10, Mediate hung better with Tiger than any of the rest of them. And he was consistently being outdriven. I mean, Tiger's hitting 8 irons.
By 30 yards,
Rocco's hitting, you know, 6 irons or, you know, whatever, but unbelievable.
I think what impressed me most was that Rocco Mediate, and you could say this for both people, both Tiger and Rocco, that any time, you know, one shot different somewhere, I mean, if Tiger doesn't double bogey the first hole 3 times out of 4, if he doesn't double bogey the 10th hole in this second round, I mean, you know, one shot anywhere would have changed it. There would have been no playoff and so on. But Rocco, both A, he made Tiger Woods do something several times. Tiger Woods has rarely been in the position where he's made to do something. If he misses the putt at Bay Hill this year, they go to a playoff, Tiger Woods likely wins. He didn't have to make that putt. He could have 2-putted and still probably won. He had to make the putt both Sunday and Monday. He had the birdie 18 both Sunday and Monday to continue the playoff or it was over. And that's where it swings the other way. Rocco Mediate could have birdied 18, a very short par 5. He had a wedge in his hands, obviously, both days, and didn't get it done from the fairway with a wedge in his hand either day, or else he would be the U.S. Open champion this year.
Yeah, and he did miss quite a few.
He putted well, but he missed a lot of 15 to 20 footers that Tiger Woods would normally make. And Tiger Woods in the playoff left six putts dead in the heart and short.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest surprise for Tiger for, you know, Sunday and then the playoff. How many putts did he leave short? Right.
Quite a few. You know, they got off to a good start. I mean, Tiger was one over, but Rocco almost made that hole in one. Rocco was three down after 10, turned it around, got to one up, and made Tiger Woods do something. And that was what was most impressive to me. You know, the course setup, I think, was also something that was impressive. This, the jokes have been made and everything, but this U.S. Open, sadly, was 10 times more exciting than the Masters this year. And it's not because a lot of people were in it. And it's not because the score was lower. The score was higher in the U.S. Open. And yet, this was more exciting.
Oh, absolutely. At least 10 times more exciting. I mean, you shouldn't shoot 75 in the final round of any major and win.
Well, Tiger shot 73.
Touche.
Right. So the course setup, though, is what we were on about. I don't think they could have done it much better. It seemed, you know, luck played a factor a little bit in lies from the rough. Tiger Woods got a horrible lie one day and had to hack out with a wedge and had a hard time doing that. We saw that. So, you know, that was interesting. But the graduated stuff worked. You know, this is Mike Davis's third year. You know, Oakmont was okay. Wingfoot was perhaps a little over the top, but that was his first year, and it seems like he's getting better. I mean, he turned a boring course into one that looked interesting.
I think that was the most surprising thing about it was the fact we watched this tournament in, what, February? I think the Buick. It's a boring tournament.
Right.
I mean, Tiger plays, and that's fine, but it's just not that exciting because the course isn't that exciting. This was not the Torrey Pines. I mean, this was not Torrey Pines. This was something completely different. And when we made our staff predictions, I'm thinking 6-under probably wins it. And there would be more and more people that would be under par just because they played the course. It's not that tough, blah, blah, blah. You know, kudos, hats off to Mike Davis. He was able to take a public course and make it back to, you know, where even par wins.
Yeah, and I think that I'm really looking forward to Bethpage next year because I think Mike Davis is getting a lot of things right, and he's really starting to understand. I think that's an advantage that he brings. You know, nothing against Tom Meeks, but his setups were a certain way, and that was that. And it led to some pretty boring and borderline U.S. Opens. Mike Davis seems to be doing a whole lot better at that. So we'll be right back with more about the U.S. Open, so stay tuned.
I mark my tie list with a black line and a red line. Black dot over the nine.
A red line through the side stamp.
With a dot between the tie list and the number.
With Korean flag.
I mark my ball with a kangaroo. Does anybody else do it like this? Check it out.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball, it's how you mark your tie list.
How do you mark your tie list?
Welcome back. Phil Mickelson was actually the local favorite. Tiger Woods grew up about 90 minutes away. So Phil Mickelson was de facto the local favorite. He grew up in San Diego, you know, 10 minutes away, played the course several times. You know, Tiger's always had a little bit better results at the Buick and at Torrey Pines. He won several junior world titles there. He's won six as opposed to two Buick titles for Phil. Phil hasn't won since the redesign in 2001. Phil's titles came earlier, but Phil basically fell on his face a little bit and fell down the slope in front of the 13th green at least three times on Saturday there, on his way to a quadruple bogey nine that also included a three putt. Not a good week for Phil. He shot a 68 on Sunday when he was out of it to, you know, I don't know, he backed into a T28 or something like that, or a T18 or something, but not a good week for the hometown favorite. Why?
You know, I don't know. Is it still... I mean, Wingfoot is in the past, and I can't believe that he'd still have a hangover from that. He just has not done squat.
He hasn't done well majors
since
then.
For somebody who is so scientific in his...
Is he putting too much... Well, that's the thing. Is he putting too much pressure on himself? And is he overthinking?
He must be, because it's, you know, it's how many wedges, and I'm not going to carry a driver, and I'm at Augusta, and I'm carrying two drivers. It's, I mean, he's...
He won carrying two drivers. He hasn't won carrying no drivers yet. I mean, Tiger Woods carries no drivers. I mean, he carried his driver, but he didn't hit it except one time at Hoylake. Phil Mickelson decides to go without a driver at a 7,400-yard U.S. Open course that's not running out of the lot.
That was pretty surprising.
And then he hits, you know, like four fairways.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you're not, if you're going to leave your driver at home, I think you'd be a little bit more accurate. I mean, it looked like it was typical Phil.
Well, is Butch Harmon failing Phil? Because it's been a year and a half now. I mean, Phil Mickelson won the Players last year, shortly after he started working with Butch. So it's been a year now, plus, you know, 2 months. So is Butch failing Phil, or is Phil failing Butch, or is Phil just, you know, out of his mind nutty? I don't know what the, I don't know what it could be. Maybe put too much pressure on himself to win. You know, this is his only chance at this, basically, because he's going to be 50 when the U.S. Open might come back.
I mean, I'm sure he did put way too much pressure being the hometown guy, but I'm just thinking at this point, I think he overanalyzes, overprepares, and this is what happens. I mean, it's fine if you're going to play three wood, but you should be hitting the majority of the fairways, and unfortunately, Phil wasn't even close.
Yeah, Phil, he's always struck me as kind of a field guy, so it's always seemed odd to me that he would pair up with Dave Pels, who's very scientific, and you know, a yin and yang thing can kind of work to an extent, but when Phil starts to get analytical himself and doesn't just leave that all to Dave, I think that he runs into trouble. I think that, you know, it might be something as simple as that. Phil's a field guy. He doesn't need five wedges. Phil could probably play with one wedge and do almost as well as anybody else. Phil has more seve in him than a lot of people, so I don't quite understand five wedges, but lay open a 60
well,
and you got
amazing
a 64
to see,
a little bit, right?
He hits the extraordinary shots and you're just sitting there and you're in awe of him doing it. But when that comes to the average shot, yeah, you know, off the tee, he's
or
not that great. And, okay, I think he averaged, what, 280 with a 3-wood. But how many fairways did he hit? Not very many. You know, the hole he gets a 9.
He got 6.
You know, most hacks could be able to do that.
I think John Atkinson probably made at least a 9 on that hole on his way to a 114.
Exactly.
Well, father and son were ejected and charged with police, and there was perhaps a scuffle with Tony Navarro, Adam Scott's caddy, on Friday when they were finishing up on the 9th hole. We'll link to this. We don't really care to talk about it a whole lot, but just a warning, you know, when you go to a golf tournament, don't be an idiot.
Yeah, these guys are the candidates for, unfortunately, the bad fathers of the year.
Well, unfortunately, too, the don't be an idiot thing applies to Ian Poulter as well. Since I have a personal history with Ian Poulter, I would let you tell the story, Alan.
Well, besides having some cheeky plaid pants, pink plaid pants, a second round, about 15 holes, and he's not playing too well, misses a 6-foot putt, screws up on the 6-incher that he backhanded.
He missed a 6-inch putt. That was fun.
Yeah, and just basically chucked his club and goodbye.
He played several more holes after that.
Yeah.
And did you tell that he flipped off the divot he made in the rough?
He's got a flipping off problem. He's flipped off what his ball divots. You?
Right. Yeah. Whatever. So maybe some British people can tell us. Maybe flipping off is not seen as like a bad thing. Like, I know it's still a bad thing in the United Kingdom, but is tell us how bad it is. Because over here, it's pretty bad. You know, you don't do that. And he seems to like to do that. So, yeah.
Kind of bizarre. He just...
Whatever. And then he withdrew, with an unspecified injury after he realized, I think, he was going to miss the cut. Yeah. Way to go, Poulter.
Yeah. He's not winning too many fans the last couple tournaments.
Poltergeist. So some closing thoughts. I mean, Lee Westwood kind of, you know, he hung in there, but he didn't make the birdie on the last hole that he needed to make. He got into the hole, but barely.
Lee Westwood, solid, but, unspectacular in the last round and really didn't do anything and squandered some opportunities. And
how about Stuart Appleby on Saturday when he had the 36-hole lead?
Oh,
and jumping back to Lee Westwood, I found it funny that Jimmy Roberts was like, how is it going to feel to sleep on the lead? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, because Tiger chipped in and he was one back. I was like, well, unless Tiger eagles 18. And then he does. And I'm like, ha, ha, ha. So much for sleeping on the lead, huh?
Yeah.
But Stuart Appleby, my kid, who's 5, could probably have putted better than he did on Saturday. He missed several putts. Ernie Els was in it for a while, but then he made like an 8 or something.
Yeah, he was...
Jeff Ogilvie kind of shot himself out of it slowly. I mean, he was in it for a long time, but he shot himself out of it slowly.
I think that was probably the biggest surprise with just... You know, you saw the guys in round one, and you're like, yeah, those guys aren't going to be there at the weekend. And then as it got a little closer and a little closer, the leaderboard gets closer to par, and then all of a sudden you see Tiger's score keeps, cruising up there, and he gets closer to the top, and you're like...
Well, he's Slocum. He was done before Tiger teed off, and yet He finishes tied for ninth due to a final round 65. He shot 600 to get to plus four, and he finished tied for ninth. So he had a good day. And it was, you know, he shoots 65, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness. And yet Tiger Woods gets it done with a 73 on the final day. I mean, low scores were obviously out there. I think the course setup allowed for it, and yet nobody did it.
Yeah, I think they said at one point, the last nine pairings, nobody had played under par.
At some point, yeah. Tiger Woods went under par and then back over and whatever. So it fluctuated for a while, but, you know, it was interesting. Robert Carlson played well, steady throughout the whole week, mostly with rounds of 70, 70, 75 on Thursday. I think he was paired with Tiger that day. 71, so he was probably a little shell-shocked on his way to that 75. So a good round for him, or a good week for him, tied for fourth. DJ Trahan, I mean, young guy, tied for fourth.
Played very well.
And Carl Peterson moves up. Miguel Angel Jimenez moved up. John Merrick, who was on the Nationwide Tour last year, he moved up, tied for sixth. Brent Snedeker had an even week, you know, 76, 73, 68, 71, so he really pulled it back on the weekend. Made up a lot of ground after, you know, again, starting 76, 73. Camille Villegas finishes tied for ninth in the U.S. Open. Not exactly the tournament you'd think he'd win, and yet ties for ninth.
Yeah, he played very, very well.
Ernie Els, you know, can't putt, yeah. He chipped one in, and that was the only thing we saw go in the hole for Ernie Els on Sunday. But rounds of 70, 72, 74, and 73, so not a bad week. Phil Mickelson tied for 18th, so there you go. Ryuji Yamada, Brant Jobe. Yeah, Sergio Garcia started off horribly, but then got to tied for 18th. He ran two rounds of 70 in the middle. Mike Weir, Robert Allenby, Hunter Mahan was in it for a while. You know, and even as badly as Adam Scott played, he finished at plus seven, tied for 26. So, you know, it was a very good leaderboard. We had some young guys, we had some international guys, and we had Tiger Woods, Rocco Media, Lee Westwood, and company. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
All in all, agreed.
It's gonna be tough to top this tournament this year or anytime.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely.
Last topic, Tiger's knee. You know, I'm not giving him any extra credit for winning because he said the pain was all after impact. So he knows the course, so he didn't really need to prepare a bunch. You know, he said he just had to get used to the change in the green speeds and his reads. So that, you know, easy enough. So I'm not going to give him any extra credit because, quite frankly, he's not taking any and he doesn't need it. So there's that. But we hear he himself said he might play Memorial and then didn't. He himself said he should be fine for the US Open. Clearly he wasn't. Rich Lerner asked him if he might be done for the year. And he didn't say no. He said basically maybe. And I don't think it takes away anything from Rocco Mediate. I think I saw one idiot say Rocco wouldn't have even had a chance if Tiger had not been injured. And Tiger said it was all after impact. So that's, again, why I'm not giving him any extra credit for winning. You know, it happened after impact. It does take a certain mental ability and maybe toughness to make a motion or do something that you know will hurt. It's after impact. So if he could convince himself of that, I don't see it being worthy of any extra celebration or credit.
Yeah, just tell us what's wrong and move on.
That about does it for episode 92 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. Check our show notes out for links to everything we talked about. Visit our forum and chat it up. Fran Olsen, this is Eric Brzezinski saying...
That looked like Sergio Garcia was giving Ernie Els putting lessons.
There you go. Bye-bye.